Good morning, everybody, and thank you, Elmer, for that introduction. And David, I'd also like to add my thanks to the work that you and the working group have done putting together this roundtable this morning. I also think it's incredibly encouraging to see the strong interest in this topic from both senior business and financial leaders and also our political leaders. The Reserve Bank has been a strong supporter of this work, and we continue to help out however we can, and we're very pleased to be able to participate again today. I think for anyone interested in global finance and global capital markets, understanding the issues that we're talking about this morning should be really very high on their agenda. The internationalisation of the RMB and the liberalisation of the Chinese capital account over coming years could be one of the truly seismic events in global capital markets in the next decade. Ultimately, this process could see Chinese citizens be able to hold internationally diversified portfolios, just as the citizens of many other countries are able to do. It could also see citizens of other countries able to buy and sell Chinese financial and other assets with far fewer restrictions than is currently the case. And it could also see the Chinese currency become one of the world's most actively traded. Now, if these things do come to pass, then I think they will reshape global capital markets. They'll reshape the global financial system, really just as China's entry into the global trading system has helped reshape global trade and production. Now, as Australians, we have obviously more than a passing interest in all of this. China's our largest trading partner in the financial linkages, while small, is still growing. And by virtue of being a small, open economy with an already liberalised capital account, changes in global capital flows could have a substantial impact on us. So really understanding what's going on here is really important for all of us, and it's not just important for those in the financial sector, but I think for our society more broadly. Now, I had the privilege of participating in the first two Australia-Hong Kong RMB dialogues, the first one in Sydney and the second one in Hong Kong quite recently. And from my participation in these dialogues, I do have the sense that we are making progress, and David talked about some of the signs of this. More businesses are genuinely interested in exploring the possibility of invoicing their trade in RMB. The financial infrastructure that supports that type of trading is gradually being put in place. And I sense that some of the stumbling blocks and some of the misperceptions that have been out there for some time are gradually being eroded. There is, though, much further to be done. As the Premier said, only around 1% of Australia's merchandise trade with China is invoiced in RMB. For China, around 12% of their merchandise trade last year was invoiced in RMB, although if you exclude the trade with Hong Kong, I think the number's closer to 5%. So these figures suggest that there is still very significant potential for growth in RMB invoicing, not only for Australian firms, but by firms around the world. Australia's own experience with liberalisation is that the growth of trade makes this financial liberalisation easier. As financial markets develop to support the trade relationship, those same markets can in time be used to support the financial relationship. So trade helps deepen financial markets, and deeper financial markets make it easier to liberalise, and I think we could expect this to be the case in China as well. In the end, though, how long that whole process takes is largely dependent upon the pace of reform by the Chinese authorities. It's also, of course, dependent upon the speed with which the financial sector of those of you in this room are able to respond to these new opportunities. In part, the development of the appropriate markets depends on commercial decisions made by financial institutions. The Reserve Bank is seeking to play a positive role in this area, partly through creating a constructive environment in which financial institutions and firms can make those decisions. And given this, I'd like to spend just a few minutes outlining the various elements of our work. First, we've simply sought to better understand how the R&B markets operate. We've sought to understand the nature of the existing arrangements and products, the impediments to developments in the market, and how an R&B market might sit within the broader Australian financial system. We have a representative office in Beijing, which has been very helpful, and the senior staff at the RBA have made frequent trips to China. We've also worked very closely with the financial sector in Australia, including the RMB Working Group, and have been involved in two separate surveys of corporate attitudes towards the use of RMB in Australia. This joint work has also assisted in providing a forum to support and coordinate industry-led discussions and initiatives. The second thing that we've done is invest some of our foreign reserves in RMB. First and foremost, this portfolio shift reflects the growing importance of China in the global economy and the broadening of our financial relationship with China. But it's also allowed us to deepen our own understanding of developments in Chinese financial markets and in the RMB. Currently, we have around 3% of our net foreign reserves invested in RMB, and I'd expect this figure to increase over time. Third is the bilateral local currency swap agreement, which David mentioned. This swap, agreed between the RBA and the People's Bank of China in 2012, allows the two central banks to exchange their local currencies for mutually agreed purposes. The key benefit of the swap is to provide confidence to the Australian market that RMB liquidity will be available through a backstop channel in the event of some disruption to the market for RMB. It is important to point out the swap is not meant to be a cheap source of RMB funding for the Australian market in normal times. Its existence, though, should be helpful for market development, as it provides market participants with greater confidence that RMB will be available in Australia during times of dislocation. Since we've signed this swap agreement, there hasn't been a need to activate it, although all the work has been done that would allow it to be used if it were required. Fourth, the RBA is currently working with the PBC on future RMB clearing and settlement arrangements, in particular the establishment of official RMB clearing bank here in Australia. In keeping with the process that's been followed in a number of other jurisdictions, this will involve the signing of an MOU between the RBA and the PBC and the designation of an official clearing bank here in Australia. Again, it's important to note that the RBA would not expect to play a significant role in choosing which particular bank would be designated. This is quite rightly largely a matter for the Chinese authorities. And in terms of timing, we are hopeful that an official RMB clearing bank could be designated over the coming months. Now, the concept of an official clearing bank is one that's sometimes open to misunderstanding, so I just want to spend a few moments setting out how this these institutions operate. In essence, their key function is to facilitate cross-border payments and receipts in RMB for trade-related purposes on behalf of financial institutions in the local market. Of course, Australian importers and exporters are already able to make and receive cross-border RMB payments through a number of existing channels. I think the main difference is that an official RMB clearing banks are afforded more direct access to China's onshore RMB and foreign exchange markets than is the case with the existing arrangements. In particular, official clearing banks have direct access to China's interbank RMB payment system, and they receive a quota to transact in China's onshore foreign exchange market. These changes also entail more direct access to the RMB liquidity from the PBC. Now, while an official RMB clearing bank would not directly increase the range or type of RMB transactions that are permitted to take place between Australia and Chinese entities, it would improve the efficiency of cross-border RMB transactions, for example, by reducing payment delays and reducing transaction costs. And over time, the presence of an official clearing bank could encourage local financial institutions to offer a broader range of RMB products to the local market than is currently the case. Now, given the way that the Chinese authorities have chosen to liberalise trading in RMB, these clearing banks are playing both an important practical and symbolic role. This means that the establishment of a clearing bank in Australia would help ensure that we're well positioned to participate in the next stages of RMB internationalisation. Ultimately, though, if China does follow the general path travelled by a number of other countries, these clearing banks are likely to become less significant. For other currencies, other arrangements exist for the clearing of cross-border flows, with financial institutions managing liquidity and other risks without access to an official clearing bank. Now, if this eventually turns out to be the case for the Chinese currency as well, then it's likely that there will be a reduced need for these official clearing banks. But in the meantime, it's clear that they are an important stepping stone on the path to a more internationally integrated Chinese currency. Now, finally, a fifth step that we hope to take soon is to obtain a quota for Australian-based financial institutions to invest in mainland China under the RQFI scheme. Following the granting of an RQFI quota to a specific jurisdiction, financial institutions operating within that jurisdiction can apply to the Chinese authorities to obtain an individual investment quota. Approved institutions can then invest their own quota in selected mainland Chinese bonds and equities using RMB obtained in the offshore market. And in this way, the RQFI scheme can be thought of as representing both a partial relaxation of controls on inward portfolio investment in China and as a means of developing an offshore RMB market. An RQFI quota would therefore represent an important next step in facilitating cross-border RMB-denominated investment transactions between our two countries. And as Australia has a relatively large and sophisticated private funds management sector, this is likely to be a significant benefit. So in summary, a lot's been happening. I feel like a lot's been happening in the central bank, and I know a lot's been happening in the private sector. And I really regard it as very much in our collective interests to continue this work. As I said at the outset, the changes that could occur in the financial system in China over coming years could really be the biggest issue in global capital markets over the next decade. We're well placed to benefit from these changes, but to do so, we need to understand them and we need to be prepared for them. Now, much of the work that we have been doing has been aimed at identifying and reducing potential impediments to the development of an RMB market in Australia. But once those impediments have been removed, and we are moving closer to that point, the development of the market is very much up to the private sector. Ultimately, in order for an RMB market in Australia to flourish, Australian corporates must be able to identify a clear business case for paying, receiving, lending, borrowing, and investing in RMB. Over time, I think this business case will emerge, but there's clearly more work for us all to be done, for us all to do. Thank you very much.
Angus Armour and his very good colleague Mark Patterson have successfully brought negotiated with BOAU Forum and will be bringing their BOAU Asia Financial Services Conference to Sydney in 2015. Dates to be decided subject to the State Council leadership's dialogue. And we signed that agreement in last month. Now, I actually have a question on liquidity, because we talk about, this subject is very relevant for the BOAU conference next year. We talk about liquidity. Renminbi is only 1.4% of global payment, and US dollars is 42.5%. And if you look at the liquidity for investment, the US dollars asset is in the region of 56 trillion, so global investor can invest in stock and bond and others. And 29 trillion for euro and 17 trillion for Japan. But in China, renminbi is, asset available for investment is only 0.3 trillion. How do we make this more liquid so it can be truly reflect the renminbi as an international currency? Thank you.
Well, I think that there are two aspects of that. One is how do we get China's currency more integrated into the global financial system so that liquidity we see in other markets also exists for the RMB? And that obviously is a process of has to start with a process of liberalization in China. That the ultimate outcome here is a fairly open capital account, and then markets develop and liquidity develops around that. So that's really within the control of the Chinese authorities. I think kind of domestically, the swap arrangement that we have here should give people confidence that if you need to access RMB and that there's some dislocation in the market because of the existence of the capital controls, that you will be able to get RMB through the Reserve Bank of Australia through this swap agreement. So that gives some certainty to people trading here that even if there is some disruption that causes liquidity problems here, that you will be able to trade in RMB.
I will ask one more question, then I'll keep quiet. Sorry. Traditionally, when a country is running major import deficit, then they're able to globalize the currency. If you look at US with a massive import, every day they add US dollars in the global market. But one of the problems with China, apart from having capital account control, it also runs a massive trade surplus. So as much as some of the Chinese companies in ADECO, where we have a joint venture in China, we run 100 million renminbi per month just on the payroll. And a lot of our Chinese companies would like to pay us in renminbi, but we can't use, we can't do anything with the currency. So I'd like to hear your comment. Shut up.
Well, I think ultimately capital account liberalization solves that problem, because if you have a capital account, a current account surplus, then you typically have a capital account deficit, and there are financial flows offsetting the trade flows. And this is why I think ultimately capital account liberalization is the solution here, because that makes that opens up the possibility of two-way flows, both for goods and services and for financial and other assets. And that ultimately is what happens for other currencies as well. And I think one day that will happen for the Chinese currency, and the difficulties that people have now are really a result of the restrictions on capital flows.
Hey, my name is Candice. I'm with Global News. Question for Bill Lowe, if possible. I was just wondering, in the context of liberalization in China, Australia has often been seen as a proxy trade for China. Do you see that changing in any way as we see further reforms there?
Well, I mean, people say that we're a proxy. Some people say we're a proxy trade for China. I'm not exactly sure that that's right. For me, the broader issue is really what happens when the Chinese capital account liberalize. I mean, at the moment, there are still very significant restrictions on the ability of Chinese citizens to buy foreign assets. And effectively, what's happened is that the People's Bank of China has bought foreign assets for the Chinese citizens through the accumulation of foreign exchange reserves. Now, as the capital account liberalized, that model of internationalization will inevitably change, and the Chinese citizens and businesses will become the owner of foreign assets rather than through the PBC. And I think that opens up a whole set of questions about what is the nature of those portfolio flows? Will they come to Australia or to other countries? And how will it affect the asset markets in those countries? And it's quite possible, given the restrictions that currently exist, if they were to come off, which I suspect they will eventually do, we'll see a very large reallocation of the outflow of capital from China to other countries. And I think that will affect our markets. And it's going to be very interesting to see how that happens. And I think that as that change occurs, it's going to open up really tremendous opportunities for financial institutions in Australia, because we have expertise to manage those assets that some Chinese citizens will obviously want to hold here. So I think, you know, for the people in the financial sector, I think there are tremendous opportunities here, and the challenge you really face is how to tap into them. And as I said before, all the central bank can do here is to create an environment in which you're able to do that with as fewer impediments as possible, and that's really what we've been trying to do.